Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us once again. I'm Patrick Connor of QueensburyRules.com, and I should be joined shortly here by James Foley of BadLeftHook.com, and also we're going to be having Joel Stern of Sweet Science on the show today. Should be pretty fun stuff. There was a lot of boxing last weekend, and needless to say, there is a lot to talk about. I mean, pretty much always have a lot to talk about, or even when we don't, we make it last a long time, because that's just how we do it. We're long-winded. James, how's it going?
Patrick, my good man.
James! I'm doing well. How are you, sir? How much boxing did you not watch last week?
I'm hanging in there. I'm hanging in there. I think I watched most of it. Except, you know, I missed the Friday offerings, but I did catch, you know, the Showtime and the HBO card, and
That's more than anybody expected. Serious.
I read the results from the Friday shows, but
there was a shitload on though. So I mean, if there was one week where, if there was one week where we could excuse anybody for not being super diehard, it's this week. And you know what? Joel Stern is already chiming in here.
Oh shit,
Mr. Stern.
Hello, gentlemen. It's an honor, I think, to be on with a Real Talk Foley in the Beard.
Thanks,
yeah.
Joel.
Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, we were pretty fired up, man. We actually were really, you know, upset that we hadn't gotten you on last year and thought, you know, it was like, what the fuck were we thinking?
Mm-hmm. Live. But that's cool.
Yeah, I was a little distraught about it. I cut myself a couple times, but let's
like
move on to the boxing from last weekend.
Pretty girl in the party, no one ever asked to dance.
Yeah, that was a...
That's you. That's definitely you. So actually, you know what? Before we even do any of the recapping stuff, well, just because I know that you might not stay for the entire show, and I also wanted to talk to you about the stuff that you do in the sport rather than you know, spend time recapping, which we could do pretty much any time. But for anybody who doesn't follow him or doesn't know, and if you don't follow him on Twitter, his handle is EfronB on Twitter. He is
Hey, what's up with that handle, by the way?
Yeah, explain that, first of all.
I'm like, what?
EfronB is my alter ego from when in high school when get a little bit crazy, I became Efron B, so that's where that came from.
Okay, that's cool.
There you go. I was hoping that you were going to say something like you were trying to bank on Zac Efron's popularity or something like that and steal some of the Twitter followers.
Yeah, Zac Efron's brother.
Yeah, no.
Joel Efron. Well, anyway, anybody who is now not leaving the show because we just scared you away, Joel is a contributor to the Sweet Science and also an assistant boxing coach at UC Davis. And so I wanted to actually talk about that a little bit if we could. A lot of people either don't know or don't realize that very, very, very few colleges in the United States anymore still offer boxing in any form, you know, even as a kind of recreational activity. It used to be offered very widely at colleges in the United States and just kind of isn't anymore. I want to say there's like 3 or 4 schools that actively participate in it at this point. But regardless, how important do you think that is to the sport, boxing in college or starting boxing at a younger age, Joel?
Well, you know, starting boxing at a younger age is, you know, it's huge to, you know, produce actual, you know, quality professional fighters. But as far as college boxing goes, it definitely helps, you know, keep the sport going, you know, on a fan basis, because most of the students that we have no background in boxing whatsoever. They hear about someone who's in the club or, you know, they see a flyer and read about something that we do and they want to check it out, and they really don't even, you know, they don't even watch fights. And so, you know, they come out to the club and they participate in the sport. They learn about the sport. And most of the students we have, they never fight. Most of them spar. You know, they learn, you know, they learn the punches. They learn the basic defense. But almost all of them now, you know, they have their foot in the sport and it means something. So, you know, when they're flipping through the channels and they see boxing, you know, they're now boxing fans, which is, you know, really a rarity these days in the, you know, among the general sports public. So on that level,
so you're doing
it's important, you know, as far as, you know, producing high-level amateurs, college boxing has produced, I think there's 10 pros in the last 20 or 30 years, so it's not a big amount, and there's been some fighters at the heavier weights that have advanced in the Olympic trials. But because most of the fighters start, you know, later in life, it's mostly something that they do in college.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you would probably agree that the amateur system in the United States, or at least currently, I mean, it seems to slowly be getting better, but at this point, it's still, its health still isn't really tip-top shape, I would say. And it doesn't really seem to be producing a whole ton of stars. Not necessarily that it has to, but it has seemed to help in years past as far as the pro game. So, yeah, it would be nice to see. Even if they're starting boxing in college, it's still starting boxing earlier than, you know, starting in their pro career or something like that, you know.
No, and I mean, we produce, you know, solid boxers, and the fighters that we have that, you know, progress more than 5 or 6 fights, then we compete them in the regular amateur fights during the off season to keep them going. You know, so we're part of that system. We're growing into that system a little bit. But yeah, it's you know, it's fairly slim. There's not a lot of people going into the gyms for the purpose of becoming a fighter, you know, just even the regular amateur gyms here, you know, we have a hard time, you know, matching people up because there's not enough people out there in the weight division, you know, that we can match up. And, you know, this is, you know, Northern California is fairly, you know, it's fairly rich, you know, amateur with its gyms, you know, compared to a lot of places in the United States, and it's still pretty slim. So, yeah, it's a real worry, you know, for the future of the, you know, the sports professionally. You need lots of people participating to find that level of elite athlete that's going to advance to be, you know, the Bradleys and the Mayweathers. You know, those are 1 in a million guys. But if you only have, you know, a couple thousand people coming in and participating, those guys aren't going to come out. And so you look at the country that have the rich amateur, you know, the well-funded, well-organized amateur systems, you know, in the Eastern European, you know, you look at Cuba, and now you see those guys really taking, you know, a big leap in the elite pros. And it's not an accident.
Well, and if you look at the state of American boxing, I don't mean to say that it's in dire straits or anything like that, but it's tough to answer the question, who is the future, when you look and you don't really see a clear future. That's part of what the amateur system is about creating, is, you know, complete fighters too.
Right. Right. Well, now, there's been some changes in the scoring in the last year that came down from the international level. It's making the amateur, the way they score the amateur bout is more equivalent to how they score the pro bouts. So you're gonna, you know, you're not gonna see as many, you know, we call it, you know, fist fencing, where, you know, guys are just looking to touch. Now it's scored more as a pro style. So that's gonna change how a lot of the amateurs fight, and I think that benefits a lot of the U.S. amateurs because they have more of a pro style. So they, you know, politics aside, if the judging is there, you know, I think we may see some more success internationally in the international competitions. And, you know, that, you know, especially at the Olympic level, where there's that great moment for exposure for the sport, you know, we may be able to produce some more stars, you know, amateur stars and pro stars, and, you know, that'll bring more people into the gym, hopefully.
So you're saying if the Olympics become more watchable because of the rule changes, that maybe that would make them more popular again, and then, you know, being, you know, getting a medal or whatever would be more meaningful like it was before, you know. I mean, because obviously I wasn't around. I don't think any of us were around. But, you know, stuff like Sugar Ray Leonard winning the gold medal and just launching into, you know, already being a superstar when he turned professional, I mean, just doesn't happen anymore. Even guys who have won, you know.
Right, and they're eliminating the headgear at the elite level. So they're not going to, so, you know, you're going to be able to, you know, Sugar Ray Leonard, you know, he was a star. He was, you know, he's a beautiful figure. He was dynamic.
Wait. Pause. All right, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's all part of who he was. And he, you know, he fought in the Olympics without that headgear.
But you know what I'm saying? I mean, like, even.
Yep.
Yeah, like Roy Jones and Floyd Mayweather were great amateurs and won gold medals and, you know, didn't win gold medals, but could have won the gold medals and, you know, performed awesome and had that same charisma and all that. And they weren't, you know, immediate superstars upon being, you know, pros. So I guess it just, yeah, it's,
yeah,
it's,
but Roy
it
was the
changed
deal.
A lot.
But, yeah, I mean, it's changed, and I don't think it's going to be anything that's going to be, you know, it has the potential to produce, you know, one or two, you know, media darling stars that if they're good enough fighters, you know, I think it'll bring wider exposure to the sport. You know, but also going to no headgear as an amateur coach, I don't like it at the elite level for safety reasons.
Yeah.
You know, I see why they're doing it for the Olympics because they're also doing it that at the Olympics because the the IEBA, who is the governing body for the Olympics and the international competitions, has their own pro series. So there's, you know, this is boxing. So there's, you know, there's money to be had there. And there's, you know, there's reasons that aren't, you know, necessarily for the betterment of the sport, but they're for the betterment for the organization why they're going to no headgear at the international level. But it's something that may or, you know, it may or may not help.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, you know, obviously those guys who are on that level who, you know, do have the intention to become professional, I mean, at some point you're going to take the headgear off and, you know, it's going to be higher stakes, I guess, higher consequences potentially. But, you know, at the level I think that you coach at, I mean, most of those guys aren't trying to become professional boxers. So would you, agree with that? And so the sport, I guess, is more about, you know, developing like discipline or just getting into the sportsman, you know, the sporting element of it, which obviously you don't want people to get injured doing that. So, I mean, what do you see as kind of, you know, boxing's merits on the amateur level?
Well, I would say it's different in college than it is if, you know, an amateur gym, you know, where, you know, most amateur gyms, it's the poor man's sport. Most of the kids we have in college are on the road to success. They're, you know, they're fairly driven. They've made it to college already, as opposed to the role of a, you know, a real gym in a neighborhood that's a real, you know, refuge from, you know, the disaster that surrounds the kid. You know, and it, you know, it can be a real sanctuary. Whereas for us, you know, it's, you know, most of the we're a club, so we're open. So we have lots and lots of members, and they just, you know, they get the benefit of, you know, really pushing themselves physically, getting in shape, you know, getting a little bit of confidence. You know, I went in there and I sparred, and I punched this guy, and he punched me, and I punched him back, and that feels good. Mm. And then for the guys that actually compete, because we're also an intercollegiate, you know, competitive club.
Right.
And there, it's, you know, it's, boxing, you know, it becomes in their blood. It becomes part of who they are. It becomes part of their identity, you know, to be a competitive boxer. And, you know, it forces a lot of discipline on their lives that, you know, because you know, most of our boxers, you know, they're going to go on to med school and, you know, things like that. So to actually compete competitively, you have to throw out a lot of the extras in your life. You have to make sacrifices, you know, to fight, because you have to be in shape. You have to be disciplined. So, you know, I guess it helps you, you know, maintain the, you know, rigorous, focused life for these guys. But, you know, the guys that fight, they love the competition. They're fighters at heart, and it gives them an opportunity, you know, to do that.
Yeah, so it's also about the pride and the, you know, competing, and just like any other sport.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's, you know, yeah, I mean, but it isn't, you know, it's not like any other sport. You know, you're fighting a man or a woman, you know, in a ring against another trained fighter, you know, in front of all your family and friends. You know, it's not just going out and playing ultimate frisbee, you know, in the most high-stake ultimate frisbee college match. You know, it's a real psychological journey that these guys have to take and women have to take to find, you know, what they have inside of themselves, and work hard and, you know, and then step in the ring and do it and, you know, find that they can make it through that fight. And then, you know, some of them, you know, we have guys that they just want that one fight. You know, they've been with us, they've been sparring, you know, they're pretty good. And they go, "Coach, I just want to fight. I just want to do it, see if I can do it." So most of our guys that we compete are like that. They're going to get their one or two fights. They're going to have the experience of going in a ring and fighting another person and coming out on the other end. And they're going to take that, you know, with them for the rest of their lives. And then the people that, you know, have more natural talent and are focused and a little bit more disciplined, and we take, you know, we try to take them to the highest level of, you know, of our sport, you know, and take them to the national tournament. And so, and then they're more of, you know, what you would, they live the life of a boxer, where they're training all the time, they're fighting as much as they can. And you have to have more, you know, you have to have 6, 7, 8 fights before you're really a boxer, as opposed to someone going out and just fighting.
That's awesome.
So as a coach, we love to get the guys to that level. Because then they can start to do the things that you see that the pros do. You know, they get that ring intelligence.
Are you scouting like the HBO? You know, when you're watching these fights, are you ever just like bringing in a little tape for the students to show them stuff that, you know? Do you use the professional fighters as models for things that?
Well, I do. Yeah, I mean, I pick guys out. This is how, you know, I take Andre Ward. It's like, you want to, you know, this, when you're
looking
at the
Andre Ward, the Andre Berto shoulder roll and stuff.
The shoulder roll is a horrible disease among the people that the young people coming in, because they all, it used to be, everyone wants to be Roy Jones or Floyd Mayweather,
whoever the top guy is.
It's a flashy guy, you know, and it's like, I'm not, and people ask, can you show me the shoulder roll? I'm like, no, I'm not going to show you the shoulder roll. If you were 8 years old, I'd show you the shoulder roll, but I'm not going to show you it now. And so, okay. But people have to want to be, and so we get a lot of shoulder roll guys, and what we'll do is we'll take them, and I'll put them in with someone who's good, and I have them beat them up.
Uh-huh.
And either they don't come back, or they go, okay, can you show me what to do? But you can't make people do what they don't want to do, and you can't teach people that don't want to be taught. So sometimes it takes a beating to get to that point. And
hey,
we pretty much break the shoulder roll pretty quick.
Can I ask you, just like as a teacher, you know, and somebody who's like obviously looking at a lot of the more technical aspects of boxing, do you find that you have more respect for the guys who are really good boxers and have that foundation? So somebody like a Mayweather versus someone like a Pacquiao, who seems like it has more natural athleticism and kind of like raw, you know, abilities, more so than like, you know, real refined boxing technique?
Yeah, I mean, I would say so. I definitely am drawn to the Mayweathers and, you know, the Rigondeaux, you know, the guys that are, you know, really, you know, technically sound the clock. And I thought that Charlo I never get their names right. I should know them now. But the one that won on Saturday, you know, I thought his boxing was
Jermell.
And you know, I thought that was a real revelation to see him, you know, box that well. So that's what I, you know, that's what I generally look for as a pro. As a coach, we try to create boxers first, but not everyone has got that level of talent. You know, it takes great vision, it takes great reflexes and anticipation, and you can see those guys, you know, fairly quickly into sparring whether they're going to have the ability to be a true boxer. And then if we have a guy like that, then we definitely try to develop them into boxers to, you know, to counter, to use their defense, you know, to feint and create openings, you know, hit and not get hit. And then if we have a – and if we can't create a boxer, then we create a fighter, you know, and just get them in good shape, you know, teach them some basics, and then, you know, have them just have them comp. But in each program, in the colleges, you know, just like gyms, there's, you know, there's different styles, and we know what people are going to bring. It's a lot easier to create a guy who's going to come forward, get in really good shape, and have him punch it out, you know, and have a war of attrition, and then it is to create a boxer. It takes a lot more time, and a boxer is going to, they're going to take a lot, there's going to be some losses in the process of creating a boxer. As they figure out, you know, when and how to throw, you know, how to deal with pressure. That takes longer to develop than it does to, you know, get in really good shape and try to just grind somebody out. So, but yeah, as a coach, I'm definitely drawn to the boxer.
Well, now that we've established that you're basically the John Kreese of amateur boxing coaches because you like to beat kids up and whatnot, let me ask you, since you – well, I mean, anybody who follows you –
better to be the John Kreese than the Jerry Sandusky, right?
Yes, that is true. That's fair. Anybody who follows you or knows you knows that you have a pretty good eye for the technical points of boxing. And so that being said, the fights that were on HBO the other night – well, the main event more specifically, did you buy into the, I don't know, I guess lack of excitement, or were you kind of in the, you know, did you take the stance that Mikey Garcia had a good performance against Juan Carlos Burgos, or were you kind of like lulled to sleep like many seem to be?
Hey,
to be honest, I was...
Joel. As an addendum to that, do you ever, when somebody is on Twitter is talking smack, do you ever just like dick slap them? And I'm like, dude, I coach boxing.
Yeah, no, I don't pull rank on Twitter. Twitter should remain ridiculous, and I'm not going to say, you know, do you know who I am? You don't know anything about boxing. It's kind of silly.
All right, I'll start replying to if I see you involved in any beefs. I'll just chime in with that myself.
That's right. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, with Mikey, I'm kind of torn because, as a coach, you know, he did everything right, you know. He won the fight clearly. You know, it's not in his nature to try to put a guy out. He did try to, you know, in the end of the last three rounds, he was coming forward and he was looking. He was looking to put him out a little bit more than he usually does. But as a fan and as someone who wants to see greatness in a fighter, you know, he definitely didn't do that. For him, you know, it's got to be, you know, what does he want out of a sport? Because he can win for a long time fighting like this. And he can get paid by HBO for, you know, quite a while before they say, okay, Mikey, you know, we need to see something more. So, you know, it's his brain in there that's getting hit. And you have seen him that he's gotten, you know, he has gotten rocked a few times when he's gotten hit clean. There's the camp, you know, there's a safety first camp, but as a fan, that's, you know, that's not what's compelling to me, you know, in the sport. I want to see, you know, people go for glory, and I haven't seen that yet. That's something that, you know, that they particularly want for him.
What did you think, James?
Well, I think, Joel, you know, you're tapping into one of the big issues that we always talk about here, which is like, you know, is this a sport where the idea is to win, you know, and just, you know, is it about the competition and about being great and being the best at it? But then there's this contingent that always harps on, well, there's an entertainment element to it. You know, it's business. You have to entertain. And what that means is like, oh, you have to get punched. You know, we want to see blood. We want to see drama. I mean, I guess in theory, you don't need to be punched if you can just knock everybody out that you fight, but there's not many guys like that. You know, so the main, you know, objects of affection for a lot of boxing fans are those guys who, you know, aren't perfect in their technique, you know, and who are, you know, willing to engage in some firefights, which, as you pointed out, you know, and it's their brains getting punched, and I guess they have the right to make those decisions, but, you know, we're indulging in something that's not great for the athletes participating in it. I mean, I have kind of like the same view that you do. I mean, I respect the hell out of the guys who have mastered the technique that are able to protect themselves and preserve their health in the future, you know, and I think Mikey has shown so far, he definitely fits in more in that category than, you know, with a guy like his stablemate, Brandon Rios, who, you know, I hate to say it, but is probably not going to sound very good in about 10 years and doesn't really already. So, you know, I think that on Saturday, I mean, it's tough because, yeah, I mean, if you're going to criticize guys like Daenerys and Rigondeaux and those type of fighters, you have to do the same thing to Mikey. I mean, it was very boring. There wasn't a lot of drama involved because after the first couple rounds, once he kind of settled into his groove and figured Burgos out or, you know, was able to counterpunch effectively enough to slow Burgos down and discourage him, you know, the fight was over. The result was already, you know, we pretty much knew Mikey was cruising to a win and nothing was going to change that. And the only real mystery was, you know, could he knock him out or not? And it's not very fun to just sit there and, you know, wait for a counterpuncher to knock somebody out for a half hour. So I don't think it does anything to hurt Mikey.
I think he's gotten some well, you know, deserved, you know, criticism from, you know, some of the, you know, bigger writers in the sport that, you know, he should have gone. He should have put this guy out. You know, if you want to be, you know, you can't have it all if you're not given it all.
I hear you, but like, then we got, you know, you got to be fair about it though. Then we should say that about Floyd Mayweather and every single one of his fights. I mean, I think the problem with Mikey is he because he has that power, and we've seen him knock guys out as he moved up in weight. I mean, at featherweight, he was a huge puncher, and he's still going to be a big puncher at 130. So there's an expectation. Same thing with Daenerys. We think we've seen the power. We know he can knock him out. Whereas somebody like Mayweather, who hasn't really had a lot of power since he moved to welterweight, we don't expect him to knock anybody out. So when he's up 10 rounds to nothing, and there's, you know, we're not saying like, oh, he needs to go for the kill. We're saying, oh, he's painting another masterpiece. I mean,
right.
I hear you. I mean,
maybe,
I thought this
was... You got to look at the, you know, if Garcia is doing this against, you know, you got to look at the level of competition that he's, you know, he's facing as well. You know, if you want to be a marquee guy, you have to have marquee performances. And, you know, you can give him, you know, he's got some passes. You know, he's knocked out, you know, most of the guys he's faces. It's not like, you know, he's been in a tradition of, you know, just riding it out, you know, producing boring fights. I think the question is, you know, what is he, you know, what is he made of, you know, as a fighter? And, you know, that's unanswered at this point. And hopefully he will, you know, face the competition in the future that will bring that out, and we'll know what we're really dealing with.
Do you think there's doubts from the Salido fight still? I mean, the fact that he seemed, you know, kind of eager. I mean, definitely very willing to allow them to, you know, stop the fight, knowing that he had a huge lead on the scorecards. In kind of a weird, you know, decision. It seemed like the corner shouldn't have even been making that decision, but it seemed like they basically had the option. Hey, do you want to continue? Well, no, we're up by 10 points, so we'll just go ahead.
Oh,
and
yeah, I mean,
the
I definitely think they were glad that they could get out of it at that point in that fight.
But, I mean, that was a moment to see, right? Like, what does Garcia have now? He's cut, and it wasn't from a punch, but, you know, how is he going to respond to this? Salido was, you know, game, if nothing else, and he was starting to come on. I mean,
he was coming on in that fight, for sure. You know, you got to look at, you know, he's in, you know, in with his brother and his dad in his corner. They're looking at him, you know, as a different, you know, there's a level of care in there that, you know, you they may not have had if it was a Margarito or a Rios. You know, and then they also, you know, they don't, he's, you know, it's still, that was his first big test. You know, he looked good beforehand, you know, obviously putting Salido down so many times and had that fight in the bag. So, yeah, I mean, I think they had questions about his conditioning. They kept asking him in the corner earlier, how you feel, how's your conditioning? So I think there may have been questions in their mind, you know, is he going to be able to hold on and hold him off? And then they saw the opportunity that they could end it and come away with the win, and they took it. So, yeah, that raises questions. You know, whether it's fair for us to, you know, judge that, I don't know. I mean, I'm still going to judge it. Yeah, I mean, I want to, of all these guys that want to be considered great, I want to see them in great fights and overcome great adversity, you know, to win it. You know, that's where the moments of the sport that you remember, those are the fights that you wait, you know, you watch all this draft for, you know, years, you know, the year, and you get, you know, two or three fights that you consider art, that you remember for the rest of your lives, where you're heart's beating and your blood's pumping, you know, for what these guys are doing, you know, in an arena across the country. And that's what you want, you know, see from these guys.
And don't start crying like Lampley.
Just haven't seen it yet from Mikey.
Don't start crying like Lampley, man. I tend to agree with both.
I'm going to actually write all that down word for word and make that my next article.
Yeah, just steal it. There's no copyright on
plagiarism.
Radio.
I mean,
no, we're bloggers. Bloggers. There's no plagiarism. Now, I agree with you guys on Mikey Garcia. I think that he's very obviously a top fighter. He has just about all the skill that you can ask for. He has really good technique. I do have questions about his chin, although I don't think that he has a bad chin. You know, I think that sooner or later everybody's going to get wobbled or hurt or knocked down or whatever. Although I do have questions about his chin, regardless, chin or not, I think that we do want to see him in fights, just the type of fights that make fighters, and he hasn't really been in those quite yet. And perhaps I do kind of agree with James, too, in that perhaps in a situation against Salido where we were looking for him to really make a statement, and I mean, don't get me wrong, knocking him down multiple times was a statement, but at the end there, it seemed kind of like he was, you know, like he was good. He was good with what he had done, and he was just like, well, you know, I'm good. I'm packing it in. I'm kind of reluctant to call guys quitters and all that type of stuff. I think that that's kind of ridiculous, but in any event, point is he bowed out. So I do kind of wonder about some of those things, but after this fight, they're already talking about, a couple people have said that they're going to set him up with Manny Pacquiao. And then, you know, there's Uriorkis Gamboa, who's kind of nipping at his heels and saying, what's up, give me a fight. Joel, what do you...
Aaron was the one that said he was going to set him up with Pacquiao, you know. And so you got to... He said it, so now everyone's saying, wow, can Mikey compete with Pacquiao? You know what I mean? That's just promoter talk to build up Mikey and put him in, you know, in the same breath as Pacquiao, you know, as, you know, right before his fight's going to come up on HBO. So, I mean, you know, a promoter is a promoter. And they're going to, you know, a promoter will take a raccoon poop and put it in a bowl and call it custard. I'm not sure if I buy the fact that they're actually going to set up Mikey Garcia to fight Pacquiao at any point.
Seems like a lot would have to fall into place to make that, you know.
You know, that's like how they say putting the cart before the horse. Yeah, that's like the cart is in a whole other fucking country. The horse is in Europe and the cart is in the U.S. I don't really see that fight at all. But
I mean, we
don't
see if Mikey can, you know, one, can he carry his power, you know, he's got to carry that power up. Because if he can't carry that power up, you know, he's going to have trouble.
Yeah, and I mean, a guy like Pacquiao who's fighting guys like Margarito and Rios, and they're just such bigger men than the guys that Mikey's fought. for one thing.
Yeah, I mean,
even if
yeah,
the two of them are around the same size, you know, that's just
well, what
an issue. I mean, aside from the fact that, you know, I think Pacquiao,
what about Gamboa,
you know,
then?
I'm all about that, to be honest. I mean, I know a lot of people don't, you know, like the fight because of Gamboa, because he hasn't really done much in the last couple of years to, you know, deserve it. But, you know, I mean, the natural talent, he's in a different level than the guys like Burgos and Rocky Martinez.
Yeah,
now,
absolutely.
Those are tough professional fighters, for sure, and I think Mikey deserves a lot of credit. I mean, they're basically the best that there was at 130 pounds. But Gamboa, at his best, you know, he showed just a lot of really special qualities. I mean, the you know, biggest one, it was speed. And he also could punch. And I think he's fought against, you know, a just as good of a caliber competition as Mikey has, although not recently. So I think it's a really intriguing fight. You know, I think it's the type of thing that, like, I forget who was mentioning or who was saying this, but it is the kind of fight that if Gamboa had any, you know, like, impulse inside to be a great prize fighter, and he still talks a lot, so you'd think that it's still inside of him somewhere, this is the kind of fight he would get up for. You know, you have to believe that this, if they can make this fight, I mean, this kind of a showdown, it would be such a huge opportunity for Gamboa to basically erase everything that's happened the last couple of years and get right back to being on the cusp of, you know, he was at one point the pound-for-pound darling. And he was the guy with, like, this great, you know, amateur pedigree and doing a lot of, you know, flashy, awesome stuff as a pro that was getting everyone excited. And now he's just kind of fallen off the map. I mean, it's, you know, I think it's a great fight. And I think that's the good direction for Mikey to go. You go to 35, take that fight. You've got, you know, Ricky Burns and Terrence Crawford fighting. There's some other stuff that stylistically would suck, but you still got fighters like Miguel Vasquez and Rishar Abreel. So, you know, I think if moving up is probably the right move, because I think eventually, you know, he gets up to, like, 140. You position yourself for bigger fights. You know, right now Pacquiao's the guy, but... I'm all about the Gamboa fight. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I think the Gamboa fight would be a great fight. I think it would be a good promotion. There's, you know, there's personality, there's absurdity, you know, and you know, it can be a really good fight. And I expect Mikey to win that fight, but I want to see it.
And that's the kind of fight
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, you could see a spectacular knockout in that fight, you know, because of the way that Gamboa lunges in and out. And, you know, if he fights the way that he fought a couple years ago, it would seem like the perfect style for Mikey to possibly do something big. At the same time, he has the hand speed and throws the combinations and movement that maybe he could, you know, trouble Garcia. I mean, I think if you get
right,
anywhere close
Garcia's,
to a prime
you know,
version...
Garcia's used to, you know, Garcia's going to have to see something that is hard to train for, that's not the usual predictable, you know, style that he's so smart, you know, he's seen in the gym for years and years and so smart and has that time.
Yeah, exactly.
This isn't, you know, this is not easy to train for. It's not easy to anticipate. And, you know, and if there is a question of the chin and if that chin is, you know, needs to be, you know, if he needs to be warmed up before, you know, if he's dangerous or, you know, if he's questionable early, which a lot of guys are, you know, before they really warm up, and, you know, if he can't get a read on Gamboa yet, you know, there's a chance to, you know, see something spectacular with Gamboa as well.
Yeah, I think the fact that Mikey's been hurt in his last couple fights does kind of make it more intriguing, because we've seen, you know, even though he recovered well and he wasn't, you know, we have seen that he's been down and he's been a little wobbled.
So what you just said was that Mikey Garcia has a shitty chin.
Exactly.
I'm quoting that.
Very shitty. No, I bet you know what I mean. It's like you see a fighter get hurt,
hey
and
guys,
then you know it's possible.
I have to go and take another call. I will may be back. If not, it was a pleasure.
All right, Joel.
No worries.
Try to come. Okay. Try to come back because we had some more stuff for you. But
okay,
thank
no,
you, sir.
Yeah.
All right, man, thanks.
That fucking guy, man, I'm never inviting him back.
What a douchebag. No, I'm just kidding. No, Joel's a good dude. It sucks he had to dip out, but...
He's an awesome guy.
And even if he doesn't come back, I'm sure we'll have him back on at some point. Like I was saying earlier, he has a really good grasp of kind of like picking out technical things when watching fights, which I dig.
So yeah. Anyway.
I want to get him and Tobin on at the same time and see if we can tell them apart. I mean, dude, go back. They sound like their vocal delivery is nearly identical.
Well, you know, Joel's from Northern California, and I think that in Northern California you can see Russia from your front porch.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Right? Yeah, so
makes
anyway.
Sense.
What was I going to say? Oh, that's right. I didn't even think about this with Mikey Garcia and Gamboa until I read our buddy Alex Berry's tweet. He had said, he said, fact, 50 Cent said he'd give Robert Garcia's son $2,000 if Mikey wins against Gamboa. And I actually didn't even think about this until he said that, but there would actually be, you know, some type of kind of bad blood storyline in a promotion for that fight, because I'm sure you remember a few years ago when Gamboa was supposed to have fought Brandon Rios, and
oh,
everything
yeah, that's
was
right.
basically all set up, and like they were getting ready to start like the promotional tour basically, and then Gamboa tried to leave Top Rank and fucked it all up, and
he
yeah.
never showed the
so,
press
I mean,
conference.
Yeah, and so that would definitely be, you know, some type of I can see Robert Garcia going like, that fucking guy, he pulled out, so now we're going to knock him out, you know, like during the promotion. I can see it.
Yeah, I think
just letting
well,
you know.
Seems like the Garcias don't, you know, can create bad blood, you know, pretty regularly.
Yeah, definitely. They need to,
whether it be
yeah,
Robert Garcia
to,
and those guys or Angel Garcia and Danny Garcia.
Yeah, they
know.
Need to look into, like, you know, getting the rights to that Neil Sedaka song, Bad Blood, just for that purpose alone. But, yeah, they seem to be in a few scuffles here and there, needless to say. But also, you know, in all fairness, there are also a handful of top fighters that are fighting out of that gym right now. So there's going to be a lot of attention and, you know, a lot of drama and stuff like, you know, focus on them, I guess.
Yeah,
but
you've done a good job. I mean, you can't.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, as far as Mikey Garcia goes from this point forward, I think that he's obviously a really good fighter. And I kind of wish that he would – I know that, like, the where he is in terms of weight class is a little bit thin right now. But I just – there's something about guys jumping all around in weight, you know, every other day. It just doesn't really do a whole lot for me, and I'd kind of like to see a fighter stay where he is for a spell and kind of, like, dominate. You know what I mean? A guy doesn't need to stay one weight his entire career or anything.
Yeah.
But
I,
you know, fighting
I
one fight at one weight and then jumping up and then that fight and then jumping up seems a bit much for me.
I'm down. I think that the problem is, like, when guys – you know, it's kind of like what we're seeing with Andre Ward right now. I mean, he's basically cleaned out 168. You know, he's beaten everybody there. There's, you know, not going to be any interest. I mean, the most interesting fight he could make right there, I guess, would be against Carl Frotz, you know, who didn't look all that good against George Groves his last fight. So it's like a rematch of a guy that he pretty, you know, handily beat. And just in those situations, and then you look up at just 7 pounds north, and you've got, you know, potentially really exciting, great matchups. I mean, I think Andre, you know, that's a case where I think there should be a little bit of pressure for a guy to move up. You know, unless you're going to see a guy like maybe Golovkin go to 68 and fight him. I mean, that would be good too. But and that's the thing with Mikey is, like, you know, who else can he fight beyond Burgos and Martinez? I mean, is there anyone else at 130 who's close to his level? And, you know, do we want to see him dominate fighters kind of like how Daener was at 122 and he just ran through those guys in the Fighter of the Year campaign? I mean, there wasn't really any, you know, high quality in their prime opponents. I don't know.
No, it's true. You know, it is true. There's not a smorgasbord of fighters laid out in front of Mikey Garcia as far as who he can fight or who he should fight or whatever. I mean, I think that there are a couple of options. I was just thinking about him just a second ago. Takashi Uchiyama, although I know that that's not really a fight that you would think of as super easily made. I mean, I've talked about it before, but a lot of the time when especially Japanese fighters find kind of even regional fame, I don't want to say that they're scared to fight outside of Japan, but I think that it's just comfortable. It's like when a lot of fighters kind of just find success in Germany, and there's no reason to leave because they get paid really well. And, you know, they'll get a steady diet of opponents and keep getting paid well. So I think that for that reason, that's probably not a fight that's ever really going to happen.
That'd be a cool fight if they ever do another. Yeah, if they ever did like a Pacquiao card in Macau, that would be an awesome undercard fight. I mean, that's maybe the only type of event where you could actually convince Mikey Garcia to go to Asia to fight, and you know maybe you could work
for
that out with Uchiyama. But yeah, it's probably not going to happen for as an HBO standalone. Because he won't travel to the U.S. and Mikey's not going to just go over there.
And you know what I just thought of now? They need to get Freddie Roach to train Uchiyama for that, and then they could do like a rematch. They could do a rematch between the Garcia camp and Freddie Roach.
Just
like,
all four fights
just shows
on pay-per-view.
Up.
Yeah, all four pay-per-view fights should be Roach versus Garcia.
Yeah, and just lower a cage into the ring. That would be a cage match. Damn, dude, we should be promoting this shit. These guys better not steal our ideas. Listen to our show. Now, there aren't a whole lot of opponents for him to be, you know, looking at 130. And, you know, if he has to look up to Gamboa, I mean, if there just aren't opponents there, I'm definitely not against moving up in weight or moving down in weight or whatever in principle.
Well,
and, you know, I just mean, like, for the sake of doing it, it seems kind of stupid.
You make
to me.
A good point. I mean, dude, there's a case to just say, like, hey, just be the man at 130. And eventually there'll be another guy who comes along who will be good enough to challenge you, you know. I mean, that's you're right. But, you know, the problem is now it's like everybody wants to be a pay-per-view star. Everybody wants to go for the huge money. And, you know, Mikey could stay at 130 and be regarded as one of the best fighters in the sport and keep winning for the next couple years, but will he ever have an opponent that's going to really, you know, catapult him into some crossover thing? I mean, the way, you know, if he wants to get there, I mean, the fastest road to get there is by making moves, you know, go up to 35, fight Gamboa. He still has a little bit of a name, a little bit of cachet, you know. Go to 40, see what's up there, you know. Maybe, I mean, I don't know, can you eventually see something like those guys like Alvarado, Provodnikov, if they stay at 140, you know, are those fights that Garcia could get involved in? I mean, but the other thing is there's always you know, potential fight. I mean, that 140-147 is just such a glamour division now with Pacquiao and Mayweather, and there are young prospects, and both those divisions are, you know, 10 guys deep with, you know, Golden Boy has all those guys. So maybe he gets, you know, moves up and fits into that mix. I don't know. But you make a good case. I mean, there's nothing wrong with just stay eight. You're, you know, junior lightweight. Stay there and just dominate it, and he probably will. But it's like the thing with Andre Ward.
I mean,
like, how is Ward going to go down as a great, great fighter? In terms of his legacy, I mean, I think he's at that point where, you know, he's kind of at that point now where he's established himself as one of the best fighters of this era, and you know, but he doesn't have like the real all-time credentials. And I think now, what is Andre Ward like? 30? You're at that point where now it's kind of like, okay, do you want to go from being like you're the number two pound for pound guy to, you know, an all-time great, even along the, you know, alongside guys from our era like Mayweather, Hopkins, Matt Pacquiao. I mean, the path to that for a guy like Andre Ward, to me, it seems like you got to go up and beat these light heavyweights. You know, you got to do something. You got to, you know, maybe eventually you got to fight Golovkin. You got to fight somebody who's your equal. Because have your best wins on paper, Kessler and Frotch, I mean, that's not, you know, what, Chad Dawson draining 7 pounds? I mean, that's not really, and maybe it's good. Maybe it's Hall of Fame just because the guy's so dominant. But I don't know. I don't think so. You know, guys like that. I think that when you're, you know, at that point where it's like, do you want to go for greatness or do you want to just be like the best guy in your weak division?
No, and you know, I think that in this particular case, as it pertains to Mikey Garcia, if the Gamboa fight. Well, because that's really the only fight I can think of off the top of my head that he should be moving to 135-4. I mean, there are other guys there that he could be fighting, Rishar Abril. That's a decent fight. I mean, I know a lot of people don't like Abril's style, and that's cool. But as far as the quality of the fight or whether or not it's a challenge, I sure as hell would say it would be.
Big challenge.
But
if he went up and beat Miguel Vasquez, that would be impressive to me, even though those fights would be terrible
money
to watch.
You know, is there money in those fights to pull him up to 135? And I would say probably not. You know, the only fight I could think of would be Gamboa.
Or
and
the
so
Crawford,
if the money
Crawford
there,
Burns winner, I think, would be big.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know that they would want to, you know. Yeah,
Yeah, I would say so. But if the money's there, I would say yeah. That's a situation where he should be moving up. But if it's not, then I would say yeah, kind of how you said, stay at 130, be a fucking boss at 130. But it is what it is. I understand where the money, you know, tends to be, or where they say, you know, fighters should be doing, and what the popular thing is to do, and all that stuff. So.
Yeah.
Whatever.
And just to add another wrinkle to it, it's like, I understand too, like, you know, it's one thing if the guy's like, hey, come on, he's a 130-pounder, like, give him a break, you know, whatever. But in this fucking bullshit day and age where guys are rehydrating 15 pounds overnight, you know, and Mikey Garcia really walks around at 145 or something like that, I mean, fuck him, you know, like, no. I mean, like, you know, I think you should go up and have to fight the bigger guys because you yourself are a bigger guy. It's the same thing with Adrian Broner at lightweight. I mean, he was, like, twice as big as every single guy that he fought there and dominated him. So, I mean, I think that that's part of it, too. I mean, I can understand, like, the old days when there was, you know, 9 weight divisions or whatever, and there was, like, you know, legitimate big difference between being a natural 147-pounder and guys fighting at middleweight. And I know people were cutting weight then, too, even on the same-day weigh-ins. But it's just gotten so out of control now. And, you know, I see a guy like Mikey. Yeah, he taps in at 130, but what does he come in the ring? 140, like, you know, mid 140s. So, you know, somebody like that, I think, for your legacy, I think you do have to move up. And I'm not convinced that, like, Yuriorkis Gamboa is a bigger man than Mikey Garcia physically.
I don't really think that there's a huge difference. I mean, and Yuriorkis Gamboa isn't very tall either, so I think that that's kind of where, like, it would even out as well. Yeah. But I mean, I will say, as far as Adrian Broner goes, that Gavin Reese fight, that was like, you know, them doing the kind of camera tricks in The Hobbit where, like, they had to shoot, like, the little hobbit from, like, way down low. Yeah, that was horrible.
Exactly. I mean, but it was just, like, an example of, like, everything that's wrong about these, like, I mean, fighters just totally abusing. Look at Chavez. It's, like, unthinkable that he was fighting at 160. I mean, he was so much bigger than Sergio that night. He was fucking, you know.
Dude, real quick, we have a guest. A surprise guest calling in. It's Mr. Matt Swain.
Hey, guys.
Oh, cereal?
Oh,
that's
hell
it?
Yeah.
Dude, you had to come in and clean up Stern's mess?
I would never admit to being able to do that. I mostly cause messes.
Hey, by the way, who is this Matthew Swain dickhead? I saw that on Twitter the other day.
Yeah, he's just some asshole.
Did you do a little switch up on that?
Yeah, I did a little switch up on that.
Finally go with the actual name.
All right.
I figured if I was going to put him on the articles on Queensberry Rules, sort of what was the cloak and dagger point?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It did kind of give you away there.
A little bit.
Hey, are you still the captain of the Mikey Garcia bandwagon?
Am I on it? No, God, no.
You're
no,
not
I like
on it?
Mikey. No, not really, and here's why. I think Mikey's already planning for his career post-boxing, and he has been for a while. So, you know, it's, for him, it really is sort of, okay, this is what's getting me to that next place. And I don't know that it's like his older brother was. Because, you know, Robert was a 9-round fighter. If you got him to 9 rounds, he was going to gas really bad. And I don't think Mikey is that way necessarily, but I think he does have a plan, so, and I'm not questioning his toughness per se, but with the Salido fight, you know, it sort of went, all right, you're dominating a guy, you're up
like 10
points.
Wait, what's his plan for post-boxing?
I believe he was wanting to go into law enforcement.
Yeah, I was going to say, didn't he, like, graduate from a police academy or something like that?
Yeah, he had graduated from, I think it
was
the
police academy.
Why the
fuck would you want to become a police officer when you can make, like, $1 million a year boxing?
I don't know, maybe he wants to be able to talk when he's 50.
This is like when Shaq became a sheriff?
Or Steven
Seagal?
Yeah,
I don't know if it's that bad. I think Mikey does have a plan, though, going forward. And he's always said that he, you know, he had a wife after boxing, and it wasn't going to define his entire life. And I think he's a really, really talented fighter.
Oh, but Joel is back.
Joel's back.
Oh, shit, it's a party.
Bam. Sorry, continue.
This reminds me of James Bagg Jr. or some sausage picnics.
Well, that guy would know about him.
Oh, man. This is like just a pot of gumbo. I love it. Anyway, continue, Swain.
I was just saying with Mikey is he clearly does have all the technical skill, and, I mean, the guy can really, really punch. He sets up his combinations really well, but the thing with the Salido fight is, was it him wanting out or was it his corner wanting him out? And, are they going to be able to do that in the future where his dad and his older brother are going to go, okay, that's been too much, and maybe pull the plug a little quick on him? I think he's a really tough fighter, but, as far as that fight went, that broken nose is something Israel Vasquez would have laughed at.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's something he did laugh at a couple times, except for the first Rafa Marquez fight.
Well, I mean,
really,
God.
And if you look at what Eduardo, his dad, went through with Fernando Vargas with the Trinidad fight early in Vargas's career, and Vargas never was really the same after that fight, you know that Salido is going to keep coming. Maybe he said, we can wait for, we can wait for another day to show what we have.
I could see that, but and I do agree that, the Trinidad fight pretty much ruined Vargas. But he was ready for it, and I don't think the Salido fight was anywhere approaching the same league as brutal as the Vargas-Trinidad fight was. I mean, Salido is not nearly the puncher that Trinidad was, and he hadn't landed anywhere near the kind of shots that Trinidad had on Vargas. So, a little bit of a tweaked nose is, how much of that was trainer and how much of it was dad.
Right. No, exactly. And if you're going to have that as a barrier to your, competition, and you can't separate those roles, it may become difficult down the road for Garcia.
Yeah, and how much do you want it to go to that side where it's too protective, or if, you remember the Rosado-Golovkin fight where Rosado's dad didn't want it stopped.
Your son's going to die, man.
Bleeding everywhere. Right. So I think it goes one of two ways where it's either they're going to be too protective or they're going to go, now get your ass back out there and keep fighting.
Right.
It's a pretty tough balance for any trainer, especially when you add in that father-son dynamic. I've always thought that, it's not across the board. I'm not saying that every father-son training duo has been bad, but many of them have seemed to end in disaster in one way or another. If it's, whether it's, funky stoppages, or they eventually wind up not friends anymore or not speaking and stuff like that. I don't know. It seems like more often than not a bad idea, but,
right. I don't have kids, so I have no idea how difficult that would be. But, the few times when I was doing amateur fights in the Marines, when I worked somebody's corner, if they were my friend, I was usually going to be a little different than if I just sort of barely knew them. And I'm sure Joel could expound on that, much, much more than me, because he has so much more experience.
Can we set something up, though, where you guys challenged each other to fight?
Me and Joel?
And then everyone gets all hyped up for it, and then it gets canceled at the last minute?
What?
Sure.
All right, cool.
We can do that.
Yeah, that'll work.
With the relationship you have with, at least that we have with our boxers, there's a surrogate father relationship there, especially at the amateur level. They're not seasoned pros. They haven't been through the experiences, 100 times as an amateur and then, 15, 20, 30 times as a professional. So there's a real closeness and a trust that needs to be there in order to give them the confidence, to go into the ring and do what they have to do. And then when they're in the ring, you have to kind of separate from that role, and you have to be, real objective and truthful with yourself of what's going on in there with your guy. And you have to separate, your desire to win the fight and, you know, and have to see the fight through, and also, you know, look out, you know, how bad it is for the guy. And also there's times where you don't, you know, even if the guy's losing and he's losing fairly badly, you're going to want him to finish that fight, you know, for his own betterment as a fighter. And then balancing that when, you know, there's real danger, you know, that's where the, you know, the tough call is.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, whether to throw in the towel, I haven't done that yet, but I've been close, and luckily haven't had to do that yet. But, you know, if I see a guy right off the bat and he's getting overwhelmed, there's no question that I'm in that fight because, you know, the stakes aren't that high.
Yeah, just make sure if you do throw in the towel that it's not Arthur Mercanti Jr. Refereeing.
That's right, yeah. He probably won't recognize it.
Well, hey, well, all right, that gives me a segue. Speaking of stoppages, the next best American heavyweight legendary mythological creature, Brian Jennings, on the undercard of Mikey Garcia versus Burgos, he scored a stoppage over James number two, he said last week, for the guy he would let bone his wife of 2013, Arthur Spielka. He's, you know, probably the best fighter in the world that walks around in tuxedo underwear. I thought it was a pretty decent fight. It was a pretty decent fight. It might have been the best fight of, you know, the HBO and Showtime cards over the weekend, I would say anyway. And, yeah, it ended in stoppage. I guess I just wanted to talk about that dude real quick. What do you guys think about Brian Jennings? What's he going to do? Where does he fit into the heavyweight division, et cetera, et cetera? Anybody pick it up?
I'll defer to Joel on that one for now.
I'm not big on the heavyweights. He's fine. It's basically heavyweight fighting these days. It's like watching checkers, and you want to see a chess match.
Both are actually really boring to watch in person.
Right. They both are. That's true. But I mean, the level of fighting is it's not high level professional boxing. Jennings is good, and he's got a good story, and he's a good guy to get behind and root for. But it's not elite. It's not elite boxing. I'll watch it because I watch boxing. It's on, and I don't really know his upside because the upside on these heavyweights is. You know, so minimal besides the Klitschko's. You know, if he'll do, I suppose he'll do well. So I guess I'm not the one to really speak on Jennings because I'm just not excited about the heavyweights. You know, I'd like to see him against Wilder because Wilder's kind of, at least there's some intrigue there. He's this, you know, crazy Frankenstein with a giant right hand. Let's see how far that right hand can go. Yeah, someone else could talk about the heavyweights.
Well, what did you think, James?
You know, I don't know. You know, last week I was being kind of in the same boat. Like, oh, heavyweights suck, so who gives a shit? They all, you know, they all suck. Klitschko's would beat them all and whatever. But, you know, I got to be a little more optimistic. I mean, yes, that's probably all true. But Jennings, to use the old announcer Andre Ward cliche, you know, he did what he had to do. It was a decent fight. I thought he looked pretty good, and I think Spielka was probably his toughest opponent. And you know, he got the stoppage win in the end. And the guy, like Joel said, I mean, he's got such a great backstory. The fact that he still has a day job, that he's, you know, just seems like such a good guy who just got into boxing, happened to be really good at it. And yeah, heavyweights suck, and it's not like a high level of, you know, professional boxing compared to the lower weight classes. That's true. But this guy's still good enough to arguably be somewhere right around, you know, the back end of the top 10 heavyweights in the world. I mean, he's probably somewhere in, you know, 10 to 20 in that ranking. So I think you have to root for him. I thought it was a really good night for him, a good way to, you know, good introduction on the HBO, you know, airwaves. And I don't know. I mean, yeah, I'm not into heavyweights either anymore, but he's a guy that I think is really easy to root for, really likable. And, you know, I don't mind at all that he'll be back on the air. And I think HBO, they're still – pushing the heavyweight division. You know, they're still interested in it because I think there is great potential, you know, for the heavyweight division to be great. You know, we've seen before, you know, when the heavyweight division is big, it just seems like boxing as a sport is more popular. I don't know if it'll ever get back to that point, but, you know, I think HBO is still investing in it. So we'll see Jennings again, and, you know, he'll maybe, you know, I'm not sure if he'll fight Deontay Wilder, but, you know, guys like Andy Ruiz or, you know, Mike Perez we just saw, you know, he's going to be in that picture, maybe Areola and Bermain Stivern, and, you know, I'm going to root for the guy.
Well, to borrow a phrase from Chad Ocho Cinco, chow, please. Oh, I thought we were just throwing out random, you know, athlete quotes. Now, I agree with you. I think
you're literally
Brian
talking
Jennings
to a tree right now, bro.
Literally. I just face lubed my way into that conversation.
It was.
And you,
know,
by the way,
I
you can put
was...
face lube on your penis.
Oh, I knew that already.
Wow.
That was a good fight. I thought that Arthur Spielka, he gave a pretty good effort. A fun heavyweight fight. Yes, it was a fun heavyweight fight, which these days could just basically mean that it was a somewhat entertaining fight and probably on a pretty low level in terms of skill or in terms of, you know, overall class. And that's what it was. I don't really know how excited I should be about Brian Jennings. At the end of the day, if you're looking at any heavyweight fighter and saying, what are they going to do in the division, you're sooner or later going to have to ask the question, should they be in against Vladimir Klitschko, and how would they do? No, and he would get knocked out. So how he gets to another point, I really don't know, because the heavyweight division sucks, and it's not really anything that's going to get you ready for a Vladimir Klitschko at this point. But if he keeps fighting, you know, fights like this, and it winds up being entertaining, I'll watch, and we'll fucking move away from the heavyweight conversation now and talk about something else. All right, let's see. The Showtime card, Lamont Peterson versus, how are they pronouncing it? Dierre Jean? I don't know. I kept saying Dierre Jean. I don't know. Whatever.
I think
that's
pretty much where everybody was at.
Pretty much. They get pretty fancy on those broadcasts sometimes. But
especially Mara.
Yeah. I like him. But Lamont Peterson.
That was Patrick who said that, by the way.
So
likes,
yep. Yeah,
huge Mauro Ranallo fan. I just want to
yep.
make sure.
Number one
particularly
fan.
Likes the alliterations.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Peninsula south of the equator. It is currently the best phrase in
no, to be honest, I don't mind
Showtime sports right now.
I'm kind of a fan, too. Not going to lie.
Well, everybody hates him, but that's all right. What did you guys
no,
think
I,
of
I really
fight?
Don't. I really don't mind him.
Okay, good.
And I know you like him from his Pride days.
That's true.
The Pride
fighting
championship.
I do like him from his Pride days. Let's expound upon that.
All right, go ahead. Sorry.
So what are the overall 140-pound implications of Lamont Peterson beating Dierre Jean? Anyone?
Very small, honestly. Dierre Jean, honestly, to me, I thought he was a little jumped up. He hadn't really fought anybody. You know, if your big win is beating Cleotis Pendarvis, I'm sorry, but you're not ready for Danny Garcia or Lucas Matisse or really anybody in the top five. And I thought Peterson, I took a giant shit on that fight on Twitter because I was really tired and in a bad mood, but it was good. And while I wasn't overly impressed with Peterson, he did what he needed to do, and we saw a little more out of Dierre Jean than I was expecting, because I was expecting him to be, you know, another Lemieux, where he's a guy that fought a lot in Canada and knocked a bunch of dudes out and then moved up a level and got beaten up. But he didn't. He fought pretty well, and, you know, the thing with Peterson is he's such a grinder. He just makes for... He never makes for a really aesthetically pleasing fight unless you were at the Matisse fight like me and Foley were and he got destroyed. Other than that, his fights tend to be slightly ugly, plenty of clinching, lots of infighting, and he just grinds you down, which he did to Amir Khan and he did to Victor Ortiz and he's done to pretty much everybody except Matisse and Bradley. But, you know, Jean had a little more than I was expecting, but Peterson thought about like I figured he would.
Did you remember
I
when...
like that version of Lamont Peterson. I like it when he comes forward and is able to, you know, to grind it out. And he, you know, he's not going to be, he's never going to be the best in his division. And he's going to create really good fights for guys. But the landscape at 140 is pretty thin for him coming off that win is, you know, the problem for him. You know, I think Garcia is probably too much for him.
Agreed.
Do you guys remember when Floyd Mayweather grinded down Cornelius Bundridge's wife after that win?
Yeah.
That was probably the. Yeah. So Foley, what do you think Lamont Peterson does from here on out? Then, so he's calling out Danny Garcia. I mean. Rematching Matisse?
Why? You know, I think that the main takeaway here is that, okay, Lamont Peterson's not completely damaged goods from the Matisse knockouts, which we kind of suspected. It wasn't, you know, a sustained horrible beating. It was kind of more of a one-punch, put him out. And, yeah, I think, you know, he looked good against Jean. He got the win against the guy that he should have beaten because Peterson's proven, you know, he's right on that next cusp. Right behind those elite guys in the division. I don't think he should get another fight with those guys unless he kind of, you know, wins a fight where he's not supposed to win. The way I kind of look at that picture, I mean, I always look at this pretty simply, right? You have Garcia's at the top of 140, then you have Matisse. We'll just exclude all of the top-ranked guys or whatever because they're not going to fight him, right? Matisse is right next to right behind Garcia. And beyond that, I mean, I think Peterson's probably – you know, right at the top of that next list. So if he fights, you know, whoever the fourth, fifth guy is and comes out of that, then, yeah, maybe some point he will deserve another shot with them. But for now, I don't want to see it. I mean, I think Garcia, of all those guys, I mean, they're going to give Amir Khan a Mayweather fight or Marcos Maidana. I mean, of all these guys, Garcia's done more than anybody to actually deserve a big type of fight. Matisse, I don't think he needs to rematch Peterson. I mean, I just thought the first fight was very, very conclusive, and I didn't see anything that suggested that, you know, Peterson could hang with him. I mean, I think Peterson's really good, and I think he can compete with – I mean, if you notice, the more kind of talented fighters that he fought, that he was able to fight on even terms, were, you know, Ortiz and Khan are also two of the kind of bigger head cases among, you know, younger fighters. When he fought – Tim Bradley, who's not a head case, you know, it was a very competitive effort, but Bradley basically won every round. I just think Peterson's, you know, right short of that top level, and I think eventually he may earn another shot at one of those guys, and he'll probably lose again. But for now, I mean, I think he kind of stays where he's at. You know, he's going to be for somebody who wants to go out and challenge Garcia or Matisse, Peterson will be the guy that they have to beat to get those fights.
Yeah, well, I mean, he may get a Broner if Broner drops down to 140 after the Maidana fight. He'd be a guy sitting there for Adrian to experiment at that weight.
Which kind of makes sense, right?
Yeah, I was thinking Broner or Zab Judah, the man with 10,000 title chances.
Judah?
Well, we've been saying why since Costa Zoo knocked him out. We've been saying, really? Zab Judah's getting a title shot? But, you know, Peterson has an alphabet strap, and Zab Judah apparently has incriminating evidence on everyone on Earth.
Yeah.
So
they got to put fights on the airways, too, and it seems like all the elite guys are just going pay-per-view this year.
You're probably right.
Peterson's a fight that can be made.
See, dude, I always want to shit on all these fights, and then I think about it, and then it's like, okay, well, I guess if Danny Garcia is not going to rematch Matisse, like, who's better at 140? All right. You know, or, like, I was kind of crapping on Mikey Garcia against Burgos, but, yeah, Burgos was, like, the number two or three guy at 130, so.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at,
sometimes,
you know, the divisions are fairly thin. You got to put people on TV. They got to make their minimums.
And I actually see Peterson as not being an easy out for Broner.
Yeah, I don't think so either. But, I mean, I think a lot of that has to do with the Broner. Maybe he's not as good as we thought he was.
Well, not just that. It's, you know, Peterson is, God, and I hate I'm going to do this because I'm going to say something that Teddy Atlas says. Peterson's the bigger guy.
What?
Yeah, Peterson is bigger than Broner.
No, I know.
But, and the thing about Peterson is, even if you can crack, you're not going to keep him out of your face. Like, you have to be able to punch like Lucas Natife can punch to keep him out of your face. And Broner can't hit like that, like not even anywhere close to that. So I would actually see that as a really, really shitty matchup for Broner, because even if he wins, he doesn't look good.
Well, and it's
well,
also
we know
like a boxer versus a boxer, which is all we all, you know, sometimes it's not a good style matchup. I mean, for, and I think that Peterson, I mean, overall, I think Saturday was a great night for Peterson. I mean, he basically showed that he's still viable to get these type of fights that we're talking about, and these are big money fights. I personally kind of hope that Broner, even though it might not be the best thing for his career, I kind of hope that he stays at 47 and rematches Maidana.
I think that'd get him beat up even worse, and I would love to watch it.
Do you really don't think there's a chance he could, like, make adjustments and you know, be more defensively responsible and get a, you know, I don't think he's ever going to knock Maidana out, but...
No, because, you know, the entire thing with the shoulder roll is what makes Floyd Mayweather so great. It's how great his footwork is. He is in and out of range all the time. He dictates where the fight takes place. And then when you try to punch him, he's not there. Adrian Broner stands right in front of you and sort of leans back a little bit. And all Maidana had to do was take what was already an overhand right and make it an even more overhand right. And then throw, you know, feign a jab to the body and throw a left hook. So I think,
I don't think
Broner's ready to change.
I don't think Broner is capable of major adjustments of style. I think he's a Mike Stafford fighter. I think that he has been drilled in that style his entire life, and he just happens to be the best by far of the Stafford guys. And, you know, as long as you can take his punch and you can come back at him and hit him hard, then I think he's going to have trouble. I don't think he's ever – I don't think that he can he's not nearly as fluid and is able to make near the adjustments that most of the top guys can make. And if he can't if he can't hurt you, then he can't beat you, I don't think, at the highest levels. And I think 147 is a huge mistake for him.
Do you think he was just a gigantic lightweight who was fighting pretty marginal competition and, you know, guys who had just every built-in advantage in terms of speed and power and size and everything?
He was an outstanding lightweight. And, you know, he was fighting guys that, you know, that were good, you know, world-class fighters, but it doesn't come up. I mean, I think his biggest advantage was his physical strength at that weight, and I think everything played off of that.
Yeah,
I
completely with it, Joel.
I think that one thing that he said that I particularly agree with is that he's not going to be prone to changing, you know, major things style-wise or even strategy-wise. We saw that against Maidana. We even saw that before the Maidana fight. He kind of just, like, posts up on the inside and doesn't really do a whole lot. He likes to play defense as if he's got a really good defense. And against guys who can't break through it, yeah, it looks good. Against a guy like Maidana who's able to just, you know, make a couple subtle changes, it's no good.
He's also...
And even against Lamont Peterson, I don't know that would be a good style or strategy for him, because Lamont Peterson does like to kind of get cagey and get inside sometimes.
Yeah, and he also seems incapable of changing his, like, idiotic act. If you guys saw the interview on, he was on Showtime on Saturday. I mean, fucking guy makes Victor Ortiz look like a Rhodes Scholar. You know, I mean, it's just, there may not, I mean, I would have thought after that knockout, like, here's a novel idea. How about just come out for an interview and just be yourself? And just listen to the questions and then, like, you know, give a thoughtful response to those questions rather than reciting these, like, pre-rehearsed, you know, awkward attempts at comedy or whatever the hell he was doing. I mean, seriously, I'd rather go watch back-to-back his sex tape and his Popeyes video than watch another interview with him.
Yeah, they're terrible. I mean, he's sort of operating under the extremely mistaken impression that that's all very clever. And that,
yeah,
you know,
very
how, when, like when Floyd Mayweather spouts out those lines, he's got whatever it is, 50 dudes that are on the payroll who laugh their ass about it.
Yeah, that's a big part
of it. And then Bronner does it, and you know, his dad might brush his hair afterwards and go, okay, that was nice. That was a real funny line. And the rest of us are just going, oh, shut up. Shut up.
It's
painful. You get to talk big when you win.
Well, and there's never a genuine moment where he's actually, like, at least Floyd, yeah, he does his act, but then there's times where he does appear to, like, you know, give some kind of, like, real response or reaction or whatever. And he's just, you know, light years from Broner in terms of his ability to be in front of a microphone. And plus, Floyd wasn't doing this shit when he was young coming up. He was actually kind of likable, you know? And at a certain point, yeah, he developed the persona and all that. But it always made sense. Like, Broner's just veering into, he basically just acting like a weird kind of, you know, I don't even know how to describe it. I mean, that was just, like, really uncomfortable, that interview on Saturday. There was nothing funny. There was nothing likable. There was nothing, like, revealing. I mean, you just look at a guy like Tim Bradley and the way that he, you know, carries himself. It's just the polar opposite. And, I mean, I really hope going forward that somebody like Tim Bradley takes the mantle as the next superstar. And it looks like we won't have to worry about Adrian Broner doing that.
No, I don't think so.
Well, if he rematches Maidana, I don't think he's going to win that fight. So hopefully he loses again and shuts the fuck up. But I also don't really see that happening because he got his trap shut pretty good and he still didn't shut it. But whatever.
Well, he'll do this, you know, for the rest of his days, and just no one's going to care once he loses to Medina. The intrigue's gone. You know, Al Haymon, because they're putting a lot behind him, wanting him, or they did, you know, to become a pay-per-view, you know, with the real money, have Broner be a pay-per-view guy, and he's probably not going to be that guy. It's going to be interesting to see how quick Golden Boy and Haymon and whoever is, you know, behind that circus is going to, you know, full tent and leave town and leave Broner, you know, dangling in the wind.
How long until they're selling his contract to Gary Shaw?
Well, I mean, yeah, no, how long until he's the guy that he's going to be the one that's going to get fed to the Lions as opposed to the one who's going to have all the advantages put behind him.
Yeah.
Know,
well, that's what's so
up.
Awesome is, like, he was fed to the Lions, but they just didn't realize it.
Right.
Well, you guys know who took a pretty decent step towards, I guess, contention this past weekend on that undercard was twin Chisarlo, Jermell Charlo. That's my nickname for him anyway. But, yeah, speaking of guys who talk, Gabe Rosado, he was kind of pretty much dismantled against Jermell Charlo on the undercard of that Lamont Peterson-Derijan fight. Man, I on some level kind of feel bad for Gabe Rosado. On another hand, I kind of liked seeing him get, you know, shut up a little bit, but then he still whined afterwards a little bit. And he's had a pretty tough schedule. I'll give him that. As far as Jermell Charlo goes, though, what do you guys think comes of Mr. Twin Charlo?
I think it's totally normal that you were you know, not displeased to see Rosado lose. I mean, it's kind of weird when you tell me how you masturbate to the video of Golovkin knocking him out every day, but no,
I thought you said that you'd keep that quiet.
Oh, shit.
Proceed.
No, dude, it was Charlo looked awesome, and I mean, for the first time, I think we got to start recognizing, okay, well, maybe it's more than just a twin gimmick. I mean, this guy's actually pretty good. You know, Rosado, you know, I mean, he's hasn't won on the highest level, but he's definitely fought some, you know, the top guys at middleweight, the division higher, and it was just a really clean, you know, pretty routine victory. I mean, I thought Rosado was, you know, applying the pressure, and Charlo was just outboxing him and, you know, was quick and athletic enough to move around and deal with it, and was, you know, it was the first time that one of their fights has actually made me notice who the guy is. And now, yeah, I think going forward, I mean, he fits right in. You know, Golden Boy has so many fighters at 154. He's going to get a title opportunity and, you know, become an intriguing player in the division.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. And I'm always excited when there's someone new, you know, that's revealed on the, you know, the elite scene that can, you know, make good fights, like Sean Porter coming out earlier this year, you know, with his performance. It's exciting. There's a new guy that's out
yeah.
there that you know, that's really a top-level fighter, and I thought Charlo showed that in that fight. I mean, his timing, his accuracy, his hand speed, his anticipation was all, it was all top-notch. You know, maybe Gabe, you know, had slowed down from those beatings just enough to, you know, make Charlo look a little bit better than he actually is, but I'm not sure that's the case. You know, I really thought that was an impressive performance, especially, you know, at his age, and I don't think his competition has been that great. He really put it all together, you know, I thought at a top level, and I think he's going to be a tough fight for you know, a lot of those guys in that division.
And, dude, 54 has, like, if you start looking at it, like, Lara, Trout, Andrade, and now Charlo, I mean, they're all basically boxers, all southpaws, too, right?
Yeah.
Is Charlo southpaw?
He's not a southpaw.
Oh, I thought he was. Okay. He's
yeah.
the one guy I wasn't sure about.
Yeah.
I mean, never mind.
I think he's really benefited from being in the same gym as Lara and, you know, sparring with that guy, and I think he, as far as anticipation and timing, I think he's really, you know, gained from, you know, seeing how Lara operates.
Oh, yeah, they're both Shield guys, right?
Yeah, they're both Shield guys. It may not gain for excitement and marketing purposes, but as far as being a boxer, I think that really helped him.
Yeah, I agree completely with Joel. I was sort of went into that fight going, all right, well, anybody who struggles with Demetrius Hopkins is probably not going to be up to too much at the top level, but completely controlled Rosado, and a lot of it was just controlling distance, and his punches were really, really sharp, and I don't know how much of that was up to Rosado, just even in the fights, like, I mean, he was really in there against Quillen, but he was taking a beating. So maybe he is a little bit diminished, but I was extremely impressed with Jermell Charlo.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you guys. I thought that he seemed to grow a little bit as a fighter against Gabe Rosado, at least in comparison to what I'd seen before, because as most of us probably had noted before the fights, it was a jump in competition, and there was a reason why a lot of us felt that Gabe Rosado would be a little bit too much for him, because based on what we'd seen before, Gabe Rosado was probably supposed to be too much for him, but he obviously showed that he has some pretty good hand speed, good accuracy. He knows how to move in a way that, you know, I didn't think that it was a scintillating fight by any means, but I also didn't think it was boring. He wasn't running away. I mean, there were a few moments where it was like the last 5 seconds of a round and he kind of skipped away, but past that, there was no running or, you know, jogging or anything. So, yeah, it was cool to see another guy at 154 kind of emerge. And hopefully we get to see a little bit more mixing and matching between those guys, although we'll see maybe the first round of it with Angulo and Canelo in, what is that, March 8th. So we'll see what happens after that, and kind of maybe that'll determine the landscape 154 as those guys are concerned. But, I'd say
yeah,
that Charlo after that is probably in there.
Canelo wanted to become a middleweight.
Yeah.
I think. After Angulo, because there's a lot of quality boxers in there, and
that's true. I'm not entirely convinced he's going to be totally over his head against Lara. We'll see. I mean, I'm very curious to see how his fight with Angulo plays out first, I guess, and then let's see if that's something that, you know, they would do. But the way he pushed for the Austin Trout fight, I mean, I don't have any reason to think that he wouldn't fight those guys if that's what makes.
No,
sense.
I don't think. Yeah, I mean, yeah, he's never been one to, at least recently, to, you know, to shy from a challenge. I don't think he likes to be questioned as far as, you know, his ability. I mean, I think that's, as a fighter, as a top fighter, I think that's why he took the Trout fight. He's only got so many, you know, similar to Broner, he's got only so many losses before they can start, you know, they can stop the Canelo pay-per-view express.
Well, losing to Mayweather is fine, but yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah.
I mean, you get a, you know, he's got to beat Angulo, I think, or it's going to be, I think that's going to set him back a little bit.
Well, I would have to say that Canelo can probably afford more losses and still be a star in comparison to, like, a guy like Charlo or Lada or any of those guys. But, yeah, there's obviously going to be a limit to, you know, losses or losses in a row or something like that. But that's, I don't know. I'd, hopefully that winds up being an action fight. So I guess we'll see.
Is the other Charlo fighting Molina? Or did I just make that up?
No. On the Angulo card.
That is happening, right?
It might be the other Molina.
The other Molina? Fuck.
Oh, damn. I can only deal with two Charlos. Jamal
is fighting Carlos Molina, right?
Yes.
No, I don't see them putting him in with.
I think that's a tough fight, man. That's a lot different than Gabe Rosado.
Nobody looks good against Molina.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, which is kind of a good thing, because maybe in a month we will only have to consider Jermell Charlo going forward. You know, as a real top contender, anyway. I mean, I got to favor Carlos Molina against Jermall, right?
What if you got like 13 pro fights under his belt? Yeah, I would.
I mean, look, the dude shared the ring with Chavez Jr. twice and came out alive. I mean, that's good enough for me.
The champ at 173.
He is the undisputed champ. But yeah, that's interesting. So honestly, like I was saying before, you know, I've had a hard time keeping track of the Charlo brothers, in large part because their names are one vowel apart. That was genius, you know. But so is Jermall considered like further along? Cause I thought Jermell was further along, or are they both kind of on the same path as far as prospect contenders? I mean, obviously these are huge, but fighting Carlos Molina, I mean, there's actually a belt on the line, but he seems to me just way more accomplished than Gabe Rosado.
Yeah, I don't know. Mostly what I know about the Charlos is people making fun of them on Twitter. So, and I've seen a few of their fights, but I couldn't tell you as far as progression.
Yeah,
I know one of them's only got like 14 fights.
And maybe that's
and
the
it's definitely not Jermell.
Okay, so that's
no, Jermall. Jermall has like 16 or 17 fights, but the Molina fight is a big leap. Like, the Molina fight is a pretty big jump in competition.
I saw him fight Antoine Smith, I think, right? He fought Antoine Smith? Jermall did?
Maybe six months ago or something like that, he knocked him out. Yeah.
I remember that. Yeah, it was kind of a weird fight, too. Like, Antoine Smith looked like crap.
Yeah,
but
and at least
still,
Anton Smith. At least we didn't get like 10 rounds of Antoine Smith's karate chopping. So, I'll take that. Yeah, it's going to be stacking up in that division pretty quickly here. But yeah, as far as the other Charlo versus Molina, that's a big leap in competition. I would say that's probably a bigger leap from where, you know, from compared to what his brother did this last weekend.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on to what's happening this weekend then, because there's a lot of Victor Ortiz to go around. So Victor Ortiz is making his comeback this weekend on Fox Sports 1 against Louis Collazo. Oh, Louis Collazo. I'm almost kind of surprised that he's still fighting. I mean, Louis Collazo is a guy that's been around for a while. He's got something like four or five losses, and off the top of my head, at least two of them are fairly disputed. So it is kind of an interesting fight, I guess, but Collazo has not been the most active guy. Neither is Ortiz, for that matter. So it's kind of a strange fight in that regard, but just about any time Victor Ortiz fights, something crazy happens or something retarded happens or, I don't know, some rule gets broken, whatever. How the hell is this fight going to go? Does anybody know? Does anybody care? Are they just going to watch anyway? Bring it.
Anytime you put Victor Ortiz on television, I will watch. Yeah, even if it's a guy like Colossus.
Wait, including Dancing with the Stars?
No, no. Come on now. Don't be silly.
Okay, so anytime you put him on television in a fight.
Anytime you put him on television fighting. Fighting, melting down, surfing, talking about his empire, I don't care, whatever it is, I will watch it other than dancing.
I'm done, yeah.
But, you know, the thing with Collazo is, when was he giving everybody so much trouble? It was Berto and Hatton, but that was like 5 years ago. And I thought he was a really slick guy until he fought Shane Mosley, the extremely faded Shane Mosley, and more or less got dominated. Like, that wasn't a disputed decision in any way. The Berto and the Hatton fights, yeah, those were close, but... And then he hadn't fought in whatever it is. You know, it's been a couple of years. I think Oscar has got enough invested in Victor at this point that they're not going to throw him in there with somebody he can't beat. So that's my guess. I think Collazo's been off too long. But, you know, he's a southpaw. He is tricky. But I don't think he's got enough power to really trouble Ortiz. Although I said the same thing about Josecito Lopez, so I have been wrong on that front before.
Who else?
If he's still there. If not, I can jump in.
Oh, it looks like maybe he did get disconnected or something. But anyway, go ahead.
He was fuming and he just hung up and he was just like, fuck those guys. Or was it?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure he got sick of this, but...
Dude, I'm so hyped up for the return of Ortiz. Like Swain said, you know, just for the sound bites, the pre-fight interview, the post-fight interview, the whatever, you know, crazy shit happens during the fight, which it probably will if history's any guide. I have no idea what to expect, though, to be honest. I mean, there's no reason to think. I mean, yeah, I think of Collazo as someone who was at his best years ago, and the last time I really saw him in like a notable fight was when he got upset by Freddie Hernandez a couple years ago. And I actually didn't see the fight, but just seeing the result kind of surprised me, because at the time Hernandez was, you know, mostly known as the guy who got knocked out in the first round by Andre Berto. I guess you have to favor Ortiz, but I mean, I think there's probably a lot of mystery about, you know, the condition of both men, and I just haven't really seen Ortiz in his interviews and all that as a fighter anymore. You know, he just doesn't seem like a guy. It just seemed like that whole experience with Mayweather and the sucker punch and, you know, getting that big payday and then what happened against Josecito. And by the way, his jaw in every interview I've seen to this day still looks like it's kind of fucked up from that. He doesn't seem like the same guy who was so, you know, delusionally convinced that he was going to be the best in the world when he, you know, went out and did what he did against Berto, which was, you know, a great fight and a really good performance. It maybe has, you know, diminished a little bit considering what we've seen from Berto since then. Maybe Berto wasn't that good, but dude, I don't know. I don't know what to say. I mean, I like Ortiz. I think he's fun to watch. I think he's, you know, I think he's shown he has a lot of boxing talent when he was at his best. He does have fast hands. He has power. He's usually in exciting fights. I mean, I'm looking forward to it. But, you know, with him being out of the ring for so long, with Collazo not having fought, you know, on any kind of world-class level. I mean, Hernandez was the best fighter he's fought recently, and even that was, I think, over 2 years ago. So... Who the hell knows, man? I mean, nothing would surprise me. And I think that's the great thing about Victor Ortiz.
Yeah, it's kind of like when I was talking about going into the Pascal versus Boutte fight, where, you know, if you have a fight where like two fighters or at least one of them is coming into the fight without having fought in a while and has been really inactive and stuff like that, it's really tough to gauge where exactly that fighter is, you know, where he is in his career, what he's looking like, what he's going to look like against this guy. And then in this case, both fighters, again, have been somewhat inactive. You know, objectively, like you said, James, Ortiz has some pretty decent power, decent hand speed. You know, he's not a bad fighter. It's just that his mental makeup it's at the very least questionable, if not, you know, totally proven to be, I don't even know. I can't even think of an adjective to describe it right now because it's just, he's crazy. He's crazy. And right now, maybe fighting is more about building his brand than it is about actually fighting. So, yeah,
his
I don't
empire.
Really know how. Yeah,
his entrepreneurship.
Yeah, he's a mogul. That's what he is. He's a mogul, and he's got a conglomerate. That's what he is. But I mean, I'm not entirely sure what to expect. But that's also one of the reasons why he's hilarious, and that's why we tune in, because there's some shit's going to go down.
Well, it's not to say you have to be some kind of, like, you know, psychotic badass to be a good fighter, but the whole, like, kind of, like, surfer mentality, like, you know, that Ortiz has, it just doesn't seem like the kind of dude, and we've seen it, you know, and I thought criticizing him after the Maidana fight was really, really unfair, but that said, we did see that the guy, there's part of him that does not enjoy what he does, and unfortunately with his style, it just seems like he could be a really good boxer, but for whatever reason he lets his opponents get into the fight and turns them into brawls. And I mean, the same thing happened with, you know, can't forget he had Maidana down like 3 times. He had Lamont Peterson down a couple times and hurt early in that fight. That's just how, you know, it's like his style of boxing doesn't fit in with his mentality, which seems to, you know, not want to get punched in the face, I think was his exact words.
Yeah.
But he is damn fun to watch, and I mean, even a debacle like the Mayweather thing, you know, looking back, I mean, it was one of the greatest spectacles that we've seen in a boxing ring in a long time, and I think it was ultimately not a bad thing in terms of the conversation it generated, and most importantly, Larry Merchant's, you know, 50 years younger line.
Well, I have a quick question for both of you guys. What is Victor Ortiz's next beauty product going to be? What's the next revolutionary product he's going to come out with? I need to know.
I'm guessing that it's going to be ball unwrinkler, so that you can have nice, smooth balls. That way you're going to streamline for when you go surfing. I can see that coming out.
Nice.
Make you more aerodynamic. I could see it.
Exactly. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I can't stop that. I just think, you know, whatever it is, I'm going to want to own it and use it.
Clearly.
Oh yeah, no, I have an entire shelf in my bathroom dedicated to Ortiz and his products.
I was skeptical at first, but once I saw the commercial and I saw those guys playing basketball, I was just kind of like, yeah, this is cool. I want to get down with some of that.
Yeah, Mr. Esty, but I always pop the hood on my car, and then without something,
yeah.
Get the car, and then go play basketball in shorts with no shirt on. That's like Tuesday.
As soon as I saw him in that picture with the cowboy, you know, with that pink handkerchief around his neck, I knew that was somebody I wanted to hang out with.
I remember seeing that picture the first time, and just going, "This is why Twitter was invented. This is why Twitter was invented because."
Oh yeah.
It just it's such a complete lack of self-awareness or of embarrassment or anything. He doesn't care how he's going to be perceived. It's just, I'm at a country concert standing next to a dude in a vest with no shirt on, and I've got on a pink bandana. This is Thursday.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's, I mean, I like him because he's different than the average you know, and you see these idiots like Adrian Broner, it's like, yeah, I mean, Ortiz is doing his kind of shtick, too. It's not like everything he's saying is, you know, completely genuine and earnest or whatever, but there's just such comedy in his, like, the way he tries to, like, present himself and his, like, kind of fake persona. You know, it just transcends being, like, you know, a cheap gimmick, and it's kind of becomes, like, more about, like, you know, a man's struggle to, you know, I'd like find acceptance in the world or something. You know, I mean, he just doesn't seem to have any, like, self-awareness, like you said, Swain. And there's times
like,
when, you know, he seems like a nice kid. I mean, he's not, like, an asshole. He's not, like, you know, he's not – that's not the issue. It's just that he's such a goofball.
No,
I hope
make a choice, I would hang out with him. I would rather go to listen to country music wearing a pink bandana than risk however God knows many STDs hanging out with Adrian Broner.
Well, that depends if Adrian Broner's buying or not.
Right.
But, yeah, all things equal.
Right.
I hope somebody gets a reference, but, yeah, Victor Ortiz reminds me of, like, the Flowers for Algernon guy of boxing. He's just, he's a special case all unto himself. He's just that you can't even like apply the normal boxing rules to him. You just can't do it. He's yeah, when he's gone, we're going to miss him. I'll tell you that much.
I've always thought of him as a little more of Forrest Gump, but yeah, I can get that.
Forrest. Yeah, there's like something, there's like a definitely like a childlike quality to him, you know, but it's just weird. I don't know. It's like he just doesn't know how to behave himself around with, you know, cameras and a microphone. He tries to be a certain type of person. I mean, I don't know. I think even that face-off with Floyd Mayweather, Mayweather was just kind of like, what the, who is this guy? But our boy Alex Berry was tweeting saying he'd be down for Berto Ortiz too, and it raises a point that, you know, when you think about the kind of fights you could potentially put Ortiz into, you know, especially if it's anything close to just, you know, even like a prime version of Ortiz, there are a lot of really fun possibilities. I was thinking actually the other day, I was mentioning, what about Broner Ortiz somewhere down the road? But it all depends, like, where is Ortiz going to be at, you know? Because I think another thing that might be part of the problem with him is, you know, he got the big fight with Mayweather, and then he gets that Dancing with the Stars deal, and he's, you know, maybe making a little bit of money, and he's got his face lube brand or whatever. You know, does Ortiz seem like the kind of dude who's going to just go back in the gym and put in all the work and put in the hours to stay, you know, keep up his craft? You have to imagine there was a lot of time he wasn't doing that. So nothing would surprise me here. If Colazzo like TKO'd him, it wouldn't really surprise me. If Ortiz knocked Colazzo out in the first or second round, it wouldn't surprise me.
That's why this is must-watch TV. That's
yeah, really,
why you've been
maybe,
rubbing
maybe
your
Khan,
boner
maybe
about
they
it
feed
for
him the Khan scraps after the Mayweather fight, because Khan Ortiz would be pretty awesome too.
Oh my God, that would be the worst build-up to a fight ever. You should be trying to decide which one was dumber that you hated more.
the lengths they would go to fake some type of like animosity between them would be pretty awesome. You know,
right,
they try to create some. You know, Ortiz would make up some backstory about like Khan, you know, like insulting him at the Olympics like 10 years ago or when they were amateurs.
Right. There would have been at some point when he was an orphan in Kansas when Pakistan.
Yeah.
Did you guys ever?
Or wouldn't let him have any water.
Did you guys ever see that video from like maybe like a year and a half, 2 years ago? I remember seeing it on YouTube because somebody posted a link to it. I literally have no idea if it was real or not, but it was some guy with like a ski mask over his face holding like a Louis Vuitton purse, and he had a British accent, and he was yelling into the camera about how he had just robbed Amir Khan of his Louis Vuitton purse and all this shit, and it was hilarious. Like I said, I don't even know if it was real or not, but that in itself just sells the backstory of a Khan versus Victor Ortiz fight, because I'm pretty sure that, you know, Victor Ortiz would like to win one for Louis Vuitton or whatever designer.
Yeah,
well,
just
I
fits.
Think the beauty of that is as much as, like, every boxer says, like, you know, oh, I'll be the best guy in my division, or I'm going to beat Floyd Mayweather or whatever, it's like, I think those two, like, actually believe it. Despite everything that's happened, I mean, I guarantee you, in their own minds, there's, like, no question Amir Khan believes he is the best fighter, you know, at like, probably right outside of Mayweather or Pacquiao or the very top level, he believes he's, like, the best guy. And I'm sure Ortiz thinks so, too. And if you ever hear the way Ortiz talks about his losses to Maidana and Lopez, it's almost like he should just be excused. Like, we should just pretend like that never happened because he's obviously a better fighter than them and he just had a bad night and, you know, some unfortunate
Dude,
stuff
it,
happened. But clearly they're beneath him.
Bro, at that point in my life, I was a tree. I was literally a tree. You can't count that, bro.
I don't know, man. He's just violent, you know. I can't get enough of that guy. I was even down with, like, the post-fight when they were trying to, like, get him out of the ring after the Lopez thing, and he just comes over, he's all smiling, and his face, like, lips, all his mouth's all swollen. Do you guys remember that?
Yeah.
Rosicito broke my jaw. He was just like, Rosicito busted my jaw. And he just had this goofy-ass smile. They were just like, dude, you're not supposed to be happy about this.
It's whatever. Whatever, you know. Yeah, that's him. It's like trying to reason with Bodie from Point Break, which is, it's him.
Well, he exhibits great sportsmanship, but it's just might have maybe because he's too dumb to understand that. I don't know.
And lucky for him, I mean, he gets to go through his entire life, and he never has to understand anything that's happening. And
that's true.
Legitimately, when you watch him, it's just like anything could happen, and he would just be like, "Yeah, it is what it is." Oh, wow.
It is what it is, guys.
You really believe that?
It literally is what it is. Literally. Well, hey, you guys know who else is fighting this weekend, but lamentably not on HBO, is Gennady Golovkin. I'm a little sad about that.
Oh, I forgot about that, yeah.
And
yeah, I think they're doing
you were right.
You for that one too, aren't they?
What's that?
The what, I'm sorry?
I said, are they not doing the streaming pay-per-view for that one as well?
I think there is a stream, but I don't know. There'll be some... You'll be able to watch the fight.
Right.
You know, but...
But,
no.
I mean, yeah, they're not doing it on HBO.
He's fighting that guy, Osamanu Adama.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what's awesome is I was at that last Chicago Friday Night Fight card, the one, and like Funfara fought on it. I can't remember. I think Jonathan Gonzalez fought on it, but it was in December, and it was right after they'd announced Golovkin and Adama, and they announced, you know, that the ring announcer was like, "Everyone, give a hand to, you know, Osamanu Adama, who's fighting Gennady Golovkin in February," and like he went up to the ring, and my buddies and I were all just like, you know, dude, that guy's gonna die in like a month, 2 months, you know, I mean. It was like, Don't get to know him too well, but
well, hopefully he'll get paid pretty well for it.
No, he'll make some money. And the interesting thing here is he's never been knocked out, so he's got that going for him. But I also don't think he's ever fought anyone a puncher like Golovkin.
Well, I'm also just looking at his BoxRec page.
Yeah.
So his losses are to Diaz.
He fought Gil, right?
Yeah, and he also lost to Don George and Daniel Gil. So he's got.
Yeah, he had
a win last year, roughly this time, over the dried-out husk of Grady Brewer. So there's that.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Yeah.
Good old Grady Brewer.
Three rounds tough.
Well, that's how it's being marketed. Is like, he's always very durable, so this will be a good test to see if you know, Golovkin's power or whatever. But I don't know. I think that Golovkin probably knocks him out.
Thing about Matt Macklin. Huh?
You're right. Yeah, it doesn't – I don't know. If you lose to Don George in any capacity, you're probably going to get knocked out by Golovkin.
Right.
Yeah, I would have to say yeah. Well, it's a bummer that it's not going to be on, you know, easily available American TV anyway, because it seems like they're pushing pretty hard for Golovkin to be, you know, an HBO brand, I guess you could say. But, you know, he's one of those guys that, needless to say, most of us would like to see more of. So, yeah, it sucks. Hopefully I'm sure we'll get, like, you know, some type of YouTube clip out of it or, you know, whatever. We'll find it one way or another. Shit. So what the hell else is going on right now? Oh, no. Before we go. Marco Huk, the Firat Arslan rematch. Did anybody watch that? I had to catch it actually today on YouTube, but did anybody see it?
Highlights.
Yeah, I just read the tweets on it. I didn't watch it.
Fuck.
Sorry.
No, it was good. What does that matter? It was pretty decent.
No, I heard it was good.
I was
reading the tweets, sounded good, but he knocked him out in like the fifth round.
Yeah, the fifth or the sixth. Yeah, and it was a pretty decent fight though. But I know that they had. At least over there, it was fairly anticipated. The first fight was pretty decent, too. But Huk just kind of stepped up and banged the shit out of him in the last round. And that was about it. And Arslan's, what, like 43, I think, now? So he's probably not going to be moving forward and doing a ton from now. He's not Bernard Hopkins.
That was the fight I went to, and that was the fight I was just referencing in Chicago, was that other, the cruiserweight, the Fragomeni and Vlodarok.
Yeah.
The one that was on ESPN. Wasn't that good of a fight.
Yeah, I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce those names.
I'm not going to try. I shouldn't have even tried. Yeah, there was like a Polish guy fighting against an Italian guy. Now, the truth is, man, a cruiserweight division is like the one that I arguably follow least of any.
there's not a ton to really follow at cruiserweight right now. I mean, a handful of years ago when Don King had a bunch of fighters at cruiserweight and there was kind of like a little round robin there, that was fun. That was about as fun as it got in the last decade. That was in like 2006 or something. You know, anyway,
yeah,
like with Wayne Braithwaite and all those guys.
I was all about Latif Coyote, but once he didn't pan out, I kind of just tuned out on the whole division.
Yeah. Well, I just like to tune in and watch him fuck you up.
He's
That's the joke.
I think he did just make a comeback, actually.
Yeah, he fought a couple weeks ago, but I caught highlights of it, and that's
God,
all I watched.
Man. If I had a boxing network, man, that's all I would do is just get guys like Coyote and Ortiz and whoever just on the show and just basically, like, they could all just fight against, like, tomato cans and just get knockouts, but really it's just all about the interview.
Yeah, no shit. That would be half of the broadcasting time, just the interview.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, that's... What else?
And
what
Pat Bradley 2 is official. Do you guys want to give your official quick predictions on that?
Oh, man.
For which fight?
Go ahead, Swain.
Pacquiao Bradley 2.
God. You know what? I'm going to pick Bradley. I know it's a little ways out, but...
Your gut's going Bradley. Your early...
My early gut is going Bradley, and here's why. I think he didn't get enough credit in the first Pacquiao fight. It's one of those that now that we've watched it four or five times, you kind of go, oh, yeah, that was closer than we all thought.
Right.
I think Pacquiao's footwork isn't there to the point anymore where he can really keep up with Tim Bradley. And, yeah, he looked really good against Brandon Rios, but Brandon Rios was going to come forward the whole fight. And for me with Pacquiao, and I know I'm really, really just nitpicking here, but he still gets in quickly. He just doesn't get out quickly anymore. So
yeah.
I'm going to go with Bradley. I think Bradley is the guy that's still getting better, and Pacquiao has declined. I mean, he's still Manny Pacquiao, but he's 35-year-old Manny Pacquiao. So I'm going to go with Bradley just based on the fact that he can make anybody look really bad. And
Patrick,
I think
you got an early?
What's that, James?
You got an early instinct on that one?
I actually kind of tend to agree with our buddy here, Mr. Swain, because it's, I mean, for the same reason why I like the fight, I agree with him. Before, when we were just talking about how it had just basically gotten, you know, finalized but not officially, I said that I thought that Tim Bradley was probably still on the upswing and that he seems to be improving as a fighter. It's kind of tough to really see that in a fight against Provodnikov, I guess, where he's fighting so out of it for so much of the fight. But that's also, I think, part of showing what his mettle is as a fighter. And so I think that he's still kind of on the upswing and still seems to be fairly prime, as it were, whereas Manny Pacquiao, you know, he's not destroyed. He's not like a shell of himself or anything like that. He's still a top fighter. But some of those fine-tuning type of nuances, like Swain's talking about, like how he jumps in and he still has good hand speed and he's still able to kind of move in on guys, but then he's forced to just kind of put his guard up and cover up. And that was how I thought that, you know, Marquez was able to get him a bit in the third fight, for example. But, yeah, I think for that reason, Bradley is probably – I think that he could pull it out. What about you?
I don't know. I'm kind of thinking Bradley, too. I just – I don't know why.
Yeah.
Same reason,
though,
you know. But I respect it. I mean, I respect the hell out of the fight. I think it's a great fight. And, you know, you can't knock Pacquiao for the competition level because I think Bradley is as tough as it gets, you know, outside of what he can realistically make. And I think it's going to be, you know, a big – I mean, he knows it. He's already fought him once. But it's going to be a big difference from Brandon Rios.
Yeah, I would agree. Well, so let's see. We have about, 30 seconds left. So let's shut it down. But everybody who tuned
in. Thanks to Swain. Thanks to Joel Stern.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, thanks
for
having me.
Thank you, Mr. Swain. Thanks to Joel Stern, who, again, writes for The Sweet Science and is an assistant boxing coach at UC Davis.
I'm Patrick Connor, QueensburyRules.com, along with James Foley, BadLeftHook.com. Thanks, everybody, who tuned in, and we'll see you next week. Take it easy. Bye.